that metal interview.
You are very welcome. One more time, thank you guys for returning, streaming, downloading, and checking out our podcast, That Metal Interview Podcast, with your friend James. And we have on this episode from Carnifex, Mr. Scott Ian Lewis. No, it's not Scott Ian of Anthrax, but it's Scott Ian Lewis, frontman extraordinaire for Carnifex, badass vocalist, of course. And we asked him the question about his name, of course. You know, I had to ask him, you know. So check out the interview with Mr. Scott Ian Lewis. Scott Lewis is, some of you might know him, frontman for Carnifex. He talks to us about the band's latest album, Graveside Confessions, Nuclear Blast Records. It's out now. Came out September 12th. And so let's check out the title of the album, the video itself, Graveside Confessions. Carnifex, we'll be right back.
Demons.
What a video, what a song. Crazy metal, man. Metal, heavy metal. Well, it's not heavy metal. This is more like death grind, death core. Not sure what you want to label it, but to me it's metal. It's death metal. So anyways, Graveside Confessions out now, Nuclear Blast Records. Buy it, stream it, download it, support the band in their website, on their socials, buy their merchandise, you know, support live music, man. If they go out on the road, go check them out. You know, any band in that, for that matter, you know. So let's go with the interview with the frontman for Carnifex, Scott Ian Lewis. Enjoy. How are things in, you're in California. How are things over there with the COVID?
You know, not great. I mean, you know, we're here in SoCal and down in San Diego. So it's been a long year and a half, or maybe it's even longer than that at this point. But yeah, basically we've been on lockdown since March 12th of 2020. So it's been tough.
The same thing here. I'm in Texas. So, but same thing, huh? I guess we're going through the same ordeal.
Yeah, it's been an ass kicker, but shit, I figure if we could survive this, maybe we'll be all right, you know?
Exactly. So let's start off with the new album, Graveside Confessions, September 12th, Nuclear Blast, right? Talk to us about the making of this record. Who wrote the riffs and the lyrics, for people asking, you know?
Yeah, well, Sean and Corey, they pretty much wrote the album musically. You know, Sean is our drummer. He's been the main songwriter in the band since day one. Corey, of course, joined in 2007. And so, or 2006, what am I saying? Yeah, he joined in 2006.
Yeah.
So he's been in the band for a super long time. And it was awesome to get those two writing again. They kind of... You know, Sean had kind of been doing a bunch of the stuff on his own, and then Corey had just been, you know, really just working on rhythm guitar stuff. So he stepped up to lead guitar, and he wrote a bunch of great shit. And then the lyrics are written by myself. I wrote all the lyrics, kind of did the theme for the album, got the cover art together, all that stuff.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
If you love good music and good podcasts, you'll love Roots Music Rambler. I'm Jason Falls. My co-host Francesca Folinazzo and I talk to the singers, songwriters, musicians, and more in Americana, alt-country, bluegrass, folk, blues, and beyond. We share our own takes on the latest news in the space and recommend new music for you to explore every episode. Come get to the roots of the music you love. Find us at RootsMusicRambler.com or go wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to Roots Music Rambler.
I saw an interview where you speak of not writing, not wanting to write about. I think one of your examples was, what if I wrote about President Bush back in the day? Remember that?
That interview. Yeah, I do remember that interview. You know, I actually kind of stand by that, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, I guess you could go either way on it. You know, some people will tell you, oh, you know, you're ignorant for ignoring politics and stuff like that. And it's like, well... It's not out of ignorance. Like, we're making a choice to not focus on an administration that lasts 4 years. It's like, you know, we're in office as a metal band longer than half these presidents are. So why am I giving them a record? Like, no offense, I don't want to talk about some random president on stage for years and years to come. Like, it just... doesn't make sense to me. Like, if I think back to our first record, Dead in My Arms, you know, we can, 2007, 2006, it was a fairly political time. A lot of people probably won't remember this, us older folks do. The whole not my president thing, that had already happened already with Bush. Like, you know, nothing new there. We've kind of already lived this all. So, you know, let's think back to that time. Let's say I'd made some anti-Bush record. Do you think that album would have any relevance right now? Anyone would give a shit?
Nobody. Nah. Nope. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I'm at with it. It's like, if you as an artist, you want to give your record to a political figure, that's your choice. You do whatever you want with it. But for us, it seems a bit superficial and a bit on the nose. Not very artistic, personally.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. That stuck with me, that President Bush example. That's cool. So, so anyways, so speaking of the new album, what were you guys shooting for? How is this album different than the last one? Would you say World War X, for example? Or would you say it's just a continuation?
No, I would say it is different. You know, it is different. The way we wrote it, the way we record it was very different. We're a four-piece now, not a five-piece, so that's a pretty big difference. We didn't really work with anybody outside of the band on the studio side. We didn't really work with any guest musicians either. So it was kind of, we've all been pretty, confined to basically solitary this like last year and a half. And luckily, Sean, who me and him, really spent the most time on the record, we live 10 minutes away from each other. So we were able to stay like focused on the album as much as we could. And I think that was actually like our kind of the saving grace of this whole last year and a half, was stay focused on the record, try to write something that the fans are really going to connect with and love, and then also write a record that is, we enjoy listening to as metalheads. Where World War X, we were definitely considering, how's it going to be received by critics? How's it going to sell? Let's hope it sells well. Let's try to set some expectation for how it does commercially, etc. This time around, we really didn't have any of those thoughts. It was more just, let's just make a record that we love listening to and the fans love listening to.
Awesome. So the songs we've heard so far are badass, so congrats on that, man. So
thank you, man. Did they send you the record? Do you have it?
I do. Awesome.
Oh, okay. Awesome. Well, I hope you've been enjoying it.
Oh, it's awesome. It's just great. I'm sure people will love it,
Hell yeah. That's good.
Awesome. So kind of like a different subject here. Have you ever had any issues with your name? Anthrax, Scott Ian.
Oh.
any stories there?
Any stories?
Anything off the wall?
No. No stories. Oh, I can't think of one thing. Okay. I can't think of one thing. It's pretty silly, but maybe that's why it's funny. I do remember I got tagged on Twitter by this publicist.
Oh.
And she was like a publicist for Anthrax. And she tagged me, and it was like all this stuff. And I just wrote back, I don't even know what it says. It's like wrong Scott or whatever. And she like blasted me with some tirade about how there can only be one, and I'm some faux fake composer. And I'm like, I hate to break it to you, but that's actually my name. Like, two people can have the same name. I don't know if you know this. But that's kind of the only thing I've ever experienced. I some people ask me, were your parents Anthrax fans? And I'm like, not even close, friend. Sorry.
I mean, what are the chances of you, for example, being born into the metal scene and, there's already another famous Scott Ian,
Yeah, it was...
I know you're Lewis.
World, I suppose.
Your last name's Lewis, of course, but yeah.
Right, yeah, yeah. Hey, it's fine with me. I like the name, so
yeah.
It's cool that someone else out there has it.
Awesome. Let's change subject here a bit. How did the Alyssa White Gloves collab come about, man? Did you guys already know her before, or how did that come together?
We were looking for a guest vocalist to be on the record that was really outside of the deathcore genre.
Yeah.
And initially, we were looking at Chelsea Wolfe, if you're familiar with her.
Uh-huh.
She does dark wave, kind of almost like post-black style music. Really interesting.
Cool.
And then that didn't work out. And so from there, we were trying to find someone who kind of had the blend of brutal vocals, but also could add a good melody. And that's when we contacted Alyssa. We sent her the demo, sent her the lyrics. She really enjoyed it, connected with the music, and said, yeah, let's go for it. So, we kind of let the music do the talking, I guess. And she liked the track, and so we decided to do it together, and I thought she did a really awesome job.
A lot of people don't know this, but in collaboration, these kind of things, artists will record on their own, right? And then send you the files or whatever. So did you guys ever get to meet her and talk to her, or was it just like that?
Well, we did shoot the music video together.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so we were met and were on set for a couple of days or on location when we did the music video. Prior to that...
Prior, yeah.
I'm trying to I don't know if I had ever met her in person. I think maybe I did when she was in the Agonist, like way back when we played a festival. But I think that was the first time we had met with her as the vocals for Arch Enemy.
I read somewhere you worked with a producer that hated deathcore.
Oh, yeah.
Wow, what happened there? Damn.
That's what messed happened up there? Well, you know, this is 2008, and we were on Victory back then. So it's, you know, it was a very, we were a young band, so we pretty much just go where we're told, you know? Yeah. And it was our first record on Victory, so we didn't, not only did we not have a lot of autonomy, but, you know, you're also trying to, you know, you want to go with the flow, and if they say, hey, you got to go work with this producer, you know, you're like, okay, yeah, let's go make a great record with this producer. And so, you know, you're trying to do everything right, and then you get there, and you kind of realize, like, you be young and excited, and you like this, you know, new deathcore kind of music, but as we know, you know, 2008, 2009, the anti-deathcore sentiment was really strong. You know, it was very popular to hate on and make fun of deathcore. You know, there was, no one cared about being a gatekeeper back then. It was all good fun, right?
Yeah.
And so we pretty much just ran into that everywhere. And believe it or not, we ran into it in the studio too, you know. So that's why the Disease and the Poison sounds very different from Dead in My Arms. You know, it sounds like very obviously different. A lot of that was the producer's influence.
Wow, what an experience. Wow. It's
You know, we don't even know we were going through it at the time. You know what I mean? You just sort of realize it. Like, why are we getting so much pushback? Like, what do you mean we can't record with this much distortion on the guitar? Like, what do you mean our drummer can't do a gravity blast? Like, what do you mean I can't, like, do a guttural under the mic? Like, that's wrong? That's not real? Okay. I mean, what do we know? We're a young band, you know?
Yeah.
So you kind of don't really realize it while you're going through it. You sort of realize it after the fact, you know?
Wow, that's messed up. Wow. Well, you guys turned out badass, so we can...
Yeah, I mean, you know, and that's the thing. It's like, the music business isn't looking out for your band. You know, it's like, you have to look out for your band. And we learned all those lessons along the way as far as, like, you realize that, like, it's not just everybody getting together to have a good time. You know, like, people are just there to make money for the most part.
So how about the 2012 hiatus? Was that because of the label, or was it a combination of things, or...
It was primarily because of the label. You know, we were in a deal that just was not structured so we make any money. And then, let's see, we fired our manager. And so that manager called our agent, made our agent fire us. Pretty standard for the music biz, retaliation is normal.
Yeah.
And especially against artists, it happens regularly where industry people will gang up to get an artist kicked off a roster, kicked off a tour. It happens all the time. So we were going through that. And then, yeah, the Victory deal basically was just like kind of made it impossible to be a functioning business, you know?
Yeah.
And then again, like the whole anti-deathcore thing, like we just couldn't get tour opportunities. The industry people just hated deathcore. We
really?
Were basically just the juggalos of metal.
That bad? Wow. Wow.
Yeah, man. It was that bad. We would get emails back from managers with just one sentence. We don't work with bands on Victory, you know? Okay.
Damn.
Wow. So we just were realizing, like, it's not about our music. It's just, you know, it's about the industry more than anything else. And so our choices as artists were, well, we can continue on and create some sort of compromised version of the band, which we weren't willing to do.
Yeah.
Or we can just say, hey, you know what? We're out. Like, we don't want to be a part of this. And that's what we did. So we just sort of took a step back. Sean and I started working on Die Without Hope just on our own. And then thankfully, eventually, you know, we had a great lawyer. We were able to get off of Victory, get out of that deal. And then we got signed with the guys over at NB. Gerardo was running the North American label at the time. And he was really supportive of the band. One of the few people that actually saw the musicianship and the artistry and the music. And he signed us. And then we did Die Without Hope. So Really those first, you know, those first 6-7 years were brutal, man. Like, people hated us. The industry didn't want to give us a chance, and we were kind of on the wrong side of cool. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Didn't have a cool manager, didn't have a cool agent, definitely didn't have the cool label. So all those things were really working against us.
That's horrible, man. So take us back in time. At what age did you find out you had a badass death metal voice? When did you find out you could? Yeah. You know, congrats on that. I mean, I can't sing like that, you know. When did you find out you could do that, you know?
Shit, man. I don't know. I'm trying to think. So my first, like, serious metal band, I was like 14, 15. I played guitar and I screamed. By saying I played guitar, I was butchering the instrument. I really only knew our riffs. You know, I was that guitar player. I think we played one or two shows with me playing guitar and singing. And what I realized that was that I didn't like all the shit that went into the guitar, like having to bring like your amp and having to, you know, make sure your guitar is in tune, have a guitar. I kind of just realized, you know, I just want to be a screamer. You know, I'd rather just sort of focus on that performance rather than just investing into hitting the notes right. Like, I'd rather perform, you know? From there I moved on to just singing. And then, I don't know, I've pretty much been a screamer since I was 15, and I had, I guess, four bands prior to Carnifex: Anastasis, Grieving Over Darkness, Incinerate, and Sylvan Fortress. And then I took like 2 years off from music because I really thought The Last Man was going to go somewhere, and like, we never did. We just couldn't get it together, like couldn't get on the road, couldn't get good shows going, the whole thing. So I kind of gave up, and
really,
working a construction job,
yeah,
and then I met Sean, and Carnifex took off, you know.
Wow, what a cool story. Cool. So I see you guys are hitting the road soon, huh? October, or when you guys
September 3rd we start touring with the Black Dahlia Murder.
Oh, okay, badass. Nice. You guys hitting Texas?
We are, absolutely. Yeah,
for sure. So give us your favorite song to play live, favorite Carnifex song to play live.
Oh, man, that is a tough one. Because,
they're all badass, of course.
Yeah, they are. And for me, what I get out of the music is people enjoying the music. That's where my enjoyment comes from. So it's really about the song that I see the audience connecting with the most and just living in the most. So, you know, Hell Chose Me, Light of My Face, Dark Heart Ceremony.
Yeah.
Oh, here, let me switch you over to speakerphone. There we go. Like, those are the ones that I'm really into, because those are the ones where I see the fans having the most fun, you know?
Yeah. Nice. All badass songs to me. So give us your best gig and give us your worst gig.
Oh, shit. I don't even know if I have the answers for that. Okay. Let me think.
These are fan questions.
Yeah, okay. Well, worst gig. All right, here you go. We played this place in Bowling, was it? Yeah, Bowling Green, Kentucky. Just out there, you know?
Okay.
And it was a bingo hall, and everyone's just smoking cigarettes inside like there's no fucking tomorrow. And then, you know, like, we have like a little catering meal that they bring you before the show, and it was a pizza, right? So we were like, all right, get some pizza, sick. But on this pizza, instead of using marinara sauce for the red sauce, they just put salsa on it, and not even good salsa. It's like Tostitos mild.
No way. I mean? What, like, the hell?
I know, man. So we're eating pizza with like salsa on it. I was just like, man,
wow,
this is the worst show fucking ever. Right?
Never thought of that. You know? Wow.
So yeah, we were playing just like this smoky ass bingo hall eating salsa pizza. That was a day where I was like, I probably should have made better choices with my life. Best show, I don't know, man. Like, there's some great ones. I instantly, my mind kind of goes to like, you know, when we headlined Summer Slaughter and we got to play sold out Los Angeles, that was a great one.
Awesome.
You know, some of the shows we've had at the Palladium in Massachusetts has been absolutely amazing. I can think back, actually thinking of a Texas show, dude, The White Rabbit.
Oh, yeah, San Antonio. Texas. Yeah.
We were touring with All Shall Perish. We were direct support for All Shall Perish. It was 2012. It was All Shall Perish, Carnifex, Flesh God Apocalypse, Conducting from the Grave, and The Contortionist. Great lineup.
Wow.
And we played The White Rabbit, and yeah, that place was just sold the fuck out.
Yeah.
It was off. Like, I still remember that show to this day.
Awesome. But yeah, The White Rabbit. Yeah, I think it's closed down, I think. Or, not sure.
Yeah, they closed it. I think they changed the name to Paper Tiger or something like that. But yeah.
That's right, yeah. Wow, what a badass show. Cool. Cool stories, man. Would you like to send a message to your fans listening to this podcast?
Yeah, man. Just, you know, stream the record wherever you can. Spotify, Apple, YouTube, wherever you listen to music. And then listen to it front to back. I hope you enjoy it. If you enjoy it, take the time to hit our web store. You can get it on vinyl, you get on CD, you get on tape, or just pick up a t-shirt. And then, of course, we're on the road all September, all of October. Come out and see a show. It'd be great to see everybody again.
Awesome. Thank you, Scott. Thank you for sharing these stories, and thanks for chatting, you know. Appreciate that. You see you on the road soon, I guess.
Hey, man. Thanks for the call. I appreciate the interview.
For those about to rock, man, thank you, guys. Thank you, guys, for joining us for the first time. For all you first-timers checking out That Metal Interview podcast, much appreciated from your friend James, all the way from the state of Texas, man. So, great pleasure speaking to Mr. Scott Ian Lewis of the great, great deathcore band Carnifex. Grindcore, or not sure what you want to call it, but to me it's some badass death metal. And the great, great vocalist, man. Great, awesome voice he has there. He spoke to us about the little hiatus they had in 2012, and we hope you guys enjoyed this interview as much as I did. So anyways, thank you, Nuclear Blast Records, for bringing us all these different badass metal bands. So thank you, Nuclear Blast, and everybody there working. A big shout out from That Metal Interview podcast. Thank you, Mr. Lewis, for spending a little bit of time with us, and don't forget to keep it metal.
Metal Interview.